Baseball season has begun, not just at the K, but at the new Urban Youth Academy at 18th and Vine. It's been up and running for a week now. The $21 million facility was sponsored by Major League Baseball following the Royals World Series victory in 2015. It has four outdoor baseball fields, an indoor field, and training areas like batting cages and stuff like that. The idea is to reignite a passion for baseball among urban youth. When the 18th and Vine location was first announced, some people worried that it wouldn't end up being used by kids in the neighborhood, that it would become more of a destination for suburban families driving into the city on weekends. So how's it looking so far? I'm Gina Kaufman. We're starting this morning's show on KCUR's Central Standard with an update on how people are feeling about the Urban Youth Academy now that it's here. Pat Clark is president of the Oak Park Neighborhood Association. Hi, Pat.
Good morning.
So you grew up playing baseball in this neighborhood.
Yes, ma'am. I brag about it. I threw my first no-hitter down at Parade Park, you know, under the lights. You know, it was a great feeling. I can still feel it now, you know, and I'm very excited about the way the park looks now.
That's awesome. So you are happy with at least what it looks like?
Yeah, I think the last time me and Ronnie was on here, I talked about I had started, I brought softball back to the neighborhood, and we got the lights fixed and got the park all doctored up and put a temporary fence up.
For the neighborhood park.
Yeah. You know, the same park that the Urban Academy's sitting in now. And the idea that I had was, you know, most of the guys that still play baseball and played baseball with me and now playing softball, we scattered out all over the city. And so I had this idea that 70 was an easy on, easy off, you know, and a perfect place to play softball again, to relive some of our old dreams. And so we had a league down there, and it went pretty, you know, pretty well. So I figured the Royals had the same thought that I had. Easy access. You could come from all over the city, all over the state, and get right there. So it worked out for the time being. But then all of a sudden, here comes this great idea to build a baseball academy down there at Truman and Paseo. And it's gorgeous. It's beautiful. I just wish that somebody had that same thought back then, you know. But, you know, everything's done in God's time.
So does it bother you, though, that the facility you had put some effort into, you know, that it's that you no longer have that same kind of ownership of it?
Well, the part that bothers me is that I went down and spoke with Darwin Penny. And, you know, I said, hey, look, I've got all these guys that played baseball that were pretty good, and they're in their 50s, 60s, and 70s now, and we're still playing softball. And not being able to play softball down there, I'm getting a lot of calls, you know. Well, why didn't you work harder? Why, you know, and, you know, you can't make somebody that doesn't see the same thing that you see do what you need them to do. But that's the conversation I had. They're talking to me about getting the first year under, but, you know, they're not understanding. The first year that we're doing this, these guys are getting older, you know.
So you still need a place to do the things you used to do in the same spot.
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
Well, I was just curious, you know, you mentioned bringing back softball, and there's a lot of talk about bringing back baseball. How has this neighborhood's relationship to baseball and softball changed since you were growing up?
Well, it's changed a lot because the last 5 years I had been working on 69th and Elmwood, wanting to turn it into a softball complex, you know, as well as having an idea to expand over on 43rd and Cleveland, you know, cut down the trees and make it a family park, you know, like they have in Tiffany Springs and other places, you know, Mid-America. You know, the kids can play baseball while the adults play softball. And so far, you know, it hasn't happened. You know, we've got the drawings and all of that. But when it comes down to funding and making it happen. See, most of the guys from my community, we spend thousands of dollars playing softball every year, but we have to go outside of our neighborhoods to play. You know, it costs to go to Liberty. It costs to go to Johnson County. You know, some places we pay the league fee and they charge us a dollar to get in.
What do you remember about playing baseball in the 18th and Vine area growing up?
Man, we had fun. You know, we actually enjoyed playing baseball. You know, I talk about when we came up, you on Saturday mornings, even during the week, you woke up at 7, 8:30, got ready to play a 9 o'clock, 9-inning game. You know, you go in the house about noon, you come back out about 1, we play basketball to about 3, 5 o'clock, we get back outside and toss the football around. And then at 6 o'clock, another 9-inning game. We try to get a doubleheader in every night. But see, in my neighborhood, you had to be in the house when the street light came on. So, you know, you take that last swing and that light popped on, everybody had to take off running at the same time. You don't have that anymore. You don't have that anymore. In the black community, there's not a lot of baseball going on. And I still say that the Summer Basketball League, AAU, it stole. It stole from baseball. Especially when your kid's a better baseball player than he is a basketball player, but he's 6'1 in the fifth and sixth grade. And you got this guy saying, hey, I can make your son the next Shaquille O'Neal. And he doesn't have a basketball idea. You know, but where we came from, we were taught to play everything.
Why do you think that, I mean, other than, are there reasons for a change other than the pressures of and enticements, I guess, of basketball?
Well, again, in the black community, basketball and football has took precedence over baseball.
You know, I'm curious what you think of this. I mean, a part of this whole effort with the Urban Youth Academy for the Royals seems to be the possibility of discovering local talent and fostering local talent. Here's what Kyle Vina, the Royals Director of Baseball Administration and a behind-the-scenes guy on this project, told our reporter back when this project was announced.
We're not naive enough to think that every kid that comes through, we can make into the next Lorenzo Cain. But what we can do is make sure that we provide for them.
You know, you just said that the Basketball Academy is part of what they do is say, hey, I can make you the next Shaquille O'Neal. Do you hear a parallel in this?
No.
No?
No. I've met Cal. He seems to be a pretty, you know, pretty nice guy. But the thing is that I don't know if they get to pick and choose, you know, who they want to work with down there. The question came up when it was introduced at the 3rd District meeting down at Gregg Center. My question was, what happens to the kids that are not as good? You know, when I came up, I played with some teams, even the bench was good. But, you know, the kids that wasn't, they got worked with, you know, until they got better. You know, that's my question. I said, now, what happens to the bench rider or the kid is less fortunate? What happens to him? And they referred me to Wayman King, who works with the Boys and Girls Club. He teaches life skills. So, I mean, instead of teaching baseball, we're teaching the kids computer or teaching them how to jump rope better. How much of a push are they getting or giving to these kids so they can be better at a sport that you know, they may like or love? You know, again, in my community, black kids just ain't playing baseball like they used to.
Why do you think playing baseball matters?
It matters because it's a sport. You know, it matters to me because, you know, that was my first love. You know, but the difference between now and then was everybody played baseball, even the girls. You know, I mean, my mom taught me how to play, you know, so there's a big difference. You know, I don't know if it's because of LeBron James, the shoe endorsements. I really can't tell you, but I know that when basketball was able to be played year round, it took away from the summer sports.
Well, you know, one of the things that I remember you being skeptical about with this new Urban Youth Academy was the idea of who is it going to be for, really? Like, some concern that it wouldn't necessarily be the neighborhood kids benefiting from it. Are you seeing an interest for the neighborhood kids in this new place?
Well, you have the do's and the don'ts. You have teams like the Kings, which is sponsored by and coached by Chris Evans, T-Shirt King. One of the best young teams I've seen in a while. But the flip side of it, and I say this all the time, anything with Urban on it is worth millions. It's worth millions. You know, I've gotten pictures, and I've talked to Darwin about it. I've gotten pictures from people that went down to just look at it for the first time, and all they saw was white kids, and they sent me those pictures. And so, I mean, when asked, you know, I mean, if this is who is going down there, you can't be mad at who attends. You know, if I had new neighbors and they were having a pool party every day, I'd want to see why come, you know, I wasn't invited and I live across the street. You know, and that's the same type of thing that we're dealing with now. A lot of folks ride by, but they don't stop by. You know?
So are you saying that you want people in the neighborhood to make that effort to go, or do you want to see the academy itself make more of an effort in outreach?
It works both ways. You know, it works both ways. You know, I'm not coming in until you let me in or till you invite me in, you know. And you know, I think the academy's gonna have to get out and you know, hit the neighborhood schools, which I know they have, but you know, I think it's going to take a little bit more of an effort by the academy, because you know, when it's like telling somebody they need to go vote, and their mind is already made up, you know, they're going to put in there who they want in there anyway. But you know, I mean, if you don't vote, you know, you don't have a conversation. So I mean, until you know, people come out of the house and go down and take a look, we won't know what it really is.
Are there obstacles to doing that?
Yes and no. I mean, the whole situation with 18th and Vine now has really, you know, turned heads. You know, we have a councilman that feels it's necessary to destroy 18th and Vine. And I use that word because that's a good word to use. And so when
can you explain what you're talking about there?
Well, there's some issues with the whole 18th and Vine. 18th and Vine to black folks is like Westport, you know, to everybody else, you know. And when that type of conversation came up, you know, people have a different attitude. And you know, I'm trying to do this the best I can without making this a black and white thing. But when you look at it, I mean, most black folks feel that 18th and Vine is theirs, you know, and I hear it all the time. That's our Westport, you know. And so to have other people come in and decide they don't want to just visit, but they want to stay now, you know, folks are feeling kind of funny. And so things like the Urban Youth Academy get, you know, get thrown into the fire right along with it. So, you know, there's obstacles.
Thinking about it in the most optimistic terms, could a sport like baseball be, you know, you talked about, could it be a unifying force? I mean, something that people said when the Royals won the World Series about the parade was that this was a great example of what it could look like for a city to come together, that this is, it shows we can do it. Could a baseball academy draw both urban and suburban youth, white kids, black kids? Could it do that, or is that a naive hope?
This is what I think. I think that if the academy chooses to make an effort, and when I say effort, we go back to the adult softball. If we were able to bring adult softball down to that park and everybody playing, you just made this a family place. Because dad's over here playing while his son's getting ready to play over there. And then, you know, you've got guys who were really good, they're still decent at old age, that could teach these kids a thing or two. I mean, and I'm saying that if you mix the two, you have an opportunity to create something else. And that, so I'm just saying that so far, it hasn't reached a point to where maybe it could be the thing that'll bring Kansas City back together. But, you know, I mean, Kansas City's different than everybody else. You know, we're real good followers. We're not real good leaders. We're real good followers. You know, we like to do what everybody else is doing everywhere else, but we never, you know, leap out on faith to see if we would try something on our own, if it would work. And I think baseball could be a driving force into making something happen, you know, as a city again, you know. But you have two different sides, and we have to bring them together as one.
And are you saying that we have to do that ourselves? Like, I mean, it sounds a little like you're saying we can't, that Major League Baseball can't come in and do that for us.
Well, so far, Major League, it's not working.
You don't think so?
Well, you know, the black teams that we see down there is Lincoln, Central, Southeast, you know, all the black schools that have baseball teams. That's who you see down there right now. I'm more concerned about the summer.
Can you explain what you mean by that?
Well, I mean, a lot of kids that's playing school ball may not decide to play in the summer. You know, I mean, let's say he's a basketball player, so he's going to play basketball. You know, I don't know how many teams from the urban core that are even registered to play down there. I know there's a few, but I don't know how many. But I'm more concerned about what it's going to look like in the summer. And see, that's what I'm just telling you, what I know, that's what the community surrounding it, that's what they're waiting on. They're waiting on to see what it looks like during the summertime and who's playing down there.
Pat, are there things that your neighborhood is dealing with that you'd like families coming in for the Urban Youth Academy to take more of an interest in or even just be aware of?
Well, my neighborhood is no different than any other. I mean, we deal with crime, you know, and crime comes in all shapes, forms, and fashions. But, you know, we have murder, but our biggest crime is trash. You know, people dropping off trash, looking for a dump site, you know. And, you know, when people decide they don't want to pick it up or they just want to add to it, you know, that's just, you know, an everyday situation for our neighborhoods.
And so what would you like to see people do? I mean, it sounds like maybe you'd like people to just stop adding to it at the very least.
I would like that, but it's just like the conversation we're having about the youth academy. You know, we got to start somewhere. If everybody just decide we're going to have a cleanup and we're going to clean up, you know, together, you know, come help me, I'll come help you. You know, that's and that's what it's going to take, just like with the academy. You know, if you don't send kids down there, you know, or you don't come out and get them, you know, we'll be at a standstill.
Pat Clark, thank you so much for joining me today. We've been talking about the Urban Youth Academy, which is now up and running near Parade Park at 18th and Vine. And in just a minute, what's new for bicyclists in Kansas City? Have our streets become any more bike-friendly than they were a year ago? Call 816-235-2888 to weigh in on that. I'm Gina Kaufman, and this is KCUR's Central Standard. Stay with us. I'm Gina Kaufman, and now on KCUR's Central Standard, it's our annual Bicycle Infrastructure Show, where we hold people's feet to the fire on the promises they've made in the past for bike trails, road diets, better connectivity, all the things bicyclists want to make their local communities safer. It's typically been the case that the hopes expressed one year are still not realized a year later. But Eric Bunch, director of Bike Walk KC, it seems like we have seen some movement in the last year.
Yeah, I would say so. We've seen some significant improvement, I would say, and a few specific kind of infrastructure areas. The Grand Bike Lane was something that we had talked about a lot over the past few years.
Yes, come on. Every year, yeah, about, Grand was going to be transformed.
Like 3 or 4 years in a row. And that finally made it through. It didn't quite go the way that the city had planned, but I think some folks got tired of waiting and just made it happen.
Okay, so flesh that out in a little more detail for me. What was supposed to happen, and why and how did it change?
So Grand is actually part of a much bigger project of quite a few bike lanes in downtown, including on 18th Street and Beardsley and the street up through the west side, West Penway. So those were all funded through federal funds, federal CMAQ, congestion mitigation and air quality funds, back in 2012. And unfortunately, the federal money didn't quite work out. There's a lot of challenges with using federal funding for smaller, what that would be considered a smaller project compared in comparison to, a large bridge or something. And so just painting bike lanes with federal funds just didn't quite work out. And so several years into the project, I think the city manager and city council and the mayor finally just said, you know what, we're going to use some other funds that are available that are a lot more flexible, local, capital improvement funds, and let's just make it happen. And that's what happened last fall. So we're happy that finally went through. But unfortunately, some of the other portions of that are still waiting. So the West Penway section, the 18th Street section from Crossroads all the way to 18th and Vine, there's a bike facility that's supposed to go in, and so we're still waiting on those. So
what kind of bike facility?
I'm not sure. I think it changes a lot throughout the corridor. So it's running from Grand all the way to I think Highland or one pass there, and that I believe is kind of a mix of traditional bike lanes and then buffered bike lanes and maybe even a protected section of protected bike lanes. So it's a bike facility is just a kind of a general term that I like to use to describe just some sort of bike lane or something. And so we're still waiting on that and hopefully that will come along soon.
So let's get back to Grand though. How does it look different now?
So Grand was before, if you may recall, it was 6 and 7 lanes, which given the amount of traffic that's on it was way more capacity than it needed. And so even in the thick of rush hour, it still had significant excess capacity. And so now what you see is they did what we call a road diet. They took a couple of those lanes away. It's now 3 lanes. It's 1 lane in each direction and a center turn lane. And then it has what we call buffered bike lanes. So the bike lanes run between the parking and the drive lanes, and there's a buffer of paint between the driving lanes and the bike lane. And you see a lot more green paint there because they've added some green paint at the intersections to make it more visible so that people know that if they're turning that they might encounter a bike.
Yeah, that is something that I've noticed recently is that I find as a driver that the bike lanes that are there are more noticeable to me, which is an important part of the bike lane being a safety feature.
Sure. Yeah, that's visibility is really important. Something that we actually advocated for since it had taken so long to get the bike lanes on Grand done. The state of the practice has really changed in terms of bike planning and facility design. And because those were funded in 2012 and designed in like 2013, 2014, and things have changed pretty significantly. And so now if we were to do that project again today, it would look different. And one I think subtle yet significant change would be that the parking would probably be off of the curb and the bike lane would be between the parking and the curb so that there would be a line of parked cars between the bike lane and the driving lane. And that makes it better for people. It actually protects the bicyclist from the door opening into the bike lane, but it also, most importantly, protects the bicyclist with some physical barrier between the driving lane and the bike lane. So,
but this is not what happened.
But that's not what happened. And that's it's baby steps, and it's unfortunate that it didn't quite go that way, but there were a lot of moving parts to this, and I think the sentiment was, we have a design, we're not going to redesign it, and let's just get it done. And that's something that I think we can all live with. But we're looking towards the future on Grand, and I think there's a great opportunity to. It's just paint, and that's what we said all along. It's just paint. It shouldn't take as long as it had been taking. But it's also paint. I also say it's just paint because it's going to fade away in a few years, and it's going to be time to redo it. And that's the next opportunity to have a new, more progressive design on Grand.
Okay, I want to get back to you, Eric, but Joe Blankenship, with us from the Long Range Planning and Preservation Department for the Kansas City, how has this all looked for you? I mean, why wasn't this possible? Like, why couldn't we get it done before? And what's changed that things are kind of moving now?
Yeah, first, Gina, thanks for having us on. It's always nice to come and talk about the progress we're making in Kansas City's bicycling community. I think for me, one of the things that I think is the most beneficial about this project on Grand is really proof of concept. And road dieting is that concept that we've proven can work, and it doesn't have a catastrophic effect on people's day-to-day experience on Grand. You know, Eric succinctly pointed out the challenges we had putting Grand in the ground were related to the use of federal funds and, compliance with some of the regulatory issues with that. And, I'm certainly not an expert in that field. I focus mostly on sort of the long-range planning aspects related to biking in Kansas City right now. I was on this program a year ago this time talking about our citywide master bike plan effort, our update to Bike KC. I'm happy to report that we've made great progress on that. We, in the coming weeks, will have a full draft of the plan out for the public to review and comment on. And the project on Grand really will help sort of make people visualize what we're talking about when we say that road diets need to be a big part of that plan.
You know, in the past, one of the things that's come up more than once is that the plan has not come with any form of accountability. Has that changed?
Absolutely. I mean, beforehand we had a plan that was a series of bike routes pointed out with no guidance on what type of bike facility, no real guidance on when they would happen, and who would be necessarily responsible for following through with the implementation. With the new bike plan, we set clear goals and objectives and sort of point out who will be responsible parties. So, our public works and our parks departments will continue to be key players in implementing infrastructure. Our bicycle pedestrian advisory committee, which Eric is the chair of, will be really critical in helping us continue to push for better policies in the city. And then our community advocates at large will really be responsible for keeping the city in check as they've been doing for the last couple of years. So this has been a really interesting year with how collaborative our community has been in helping to push the city forward in a meaningful way to get better transportation options on the ground.
So I'm in here talking with people who are involved in making the city's bike infrastructure change, develop, improve, hopefully. But I'm curious what people out there riding bikes are seeing, if you're feeling that change, if there are still things that really need to be addressed. Call 816-235-2888 to talk with us about that. And Eric Bunch, something else that's happened in the last year, the Complete Streets Ordinance.
Yeah. You know, we focus a lot on bike infrastructure and implementing the bike plan and this conversation, but I think we need to even look a little bit bigger, and Bike Walk AC certainly does, and that's one of the reasons why we pursued a Complete Streets Ordinance. So what the Complete Streets Ordinance does, and that was about a year-long process to gain some political will to approve it, but also building
that on the ballot.
It was simply an ordinance that the city council adopted, and they ultimately adopted it unanimously with 9 or 10 co-sponsors. So it ended up not being a very controversial thing. It was certainly not the most controversial thing that particular council hearing, because one of the airport MOUs was up for discussion then. So, but what it does is it ensures that anytime the city touches a street in some way, they will consider how to improve it for all mode users. So we're not just looking at improving things for cars or just simply repainting the street the way it has always been. They are strongly considering, pedestrian improvements and accessibility improvements and bike improvements and implementing the bike plan when a street is resurfaced, when a street is reconstructed completely with geobond funding, that it will be a complete street. It will include sidewalks and bike lanes if it's on the bike plan, and trails and those sorts of things. And so it really just puts a little bit more guidance on how to improve our streets for all users, so that we're not just kind of doing the same thing we've always done. And so we were really fortunate to have the support of council on that, and I can't thank them enough for their support, but also city staff. Joe was instrumental in making sure that ordinance was written well. The Public Works Department stepped in and helped out a lot. Parks Department was involved. So then we also worked with a lot of community partners. We built a pretty active coalition in support of it, and the reason why I think it's so important is that it goes far beyond just people on bikes. It's about accessibility. It's about public health. It's about equity and access to jobs. And so, the thing that I always say is
like, if you can't afford a car,
right,
you still need a way to get places.
Absolutely, yeah. And so, in the United States, the average car costs about $10,000 a year to own and operate and maintain. And that's a cost that a lot of our population, our residents and citizens of Kansas City just can't bear. And so we have to ensure that our public transit system is not only sufficiently funded and running well, but the access to the public transit system is good through high quality sidewalks, crosswalks, and in bike lanes. And so that's one of the compelling reasons I think that many people got behind the Complete Streets Ordinance.
Let's talk with Hal calling us from KU. Hi, Hal.
Hi, how are you all doing?
Good. What do you want to share or ask?
Well, I tell you what, the improvements that we've had are just wonderful. It makes it fun to get out on the bike and everything, but the problem that I have with it all is the main problem is still the car drivers. I'm using the bike facilities, for instance, down on Southwest Boulevard, moving out of the bike lane into the traffic lane to make a legal left-hand turn. And before I can complete my turn, some jerk in a car decides that he doesn't want to wait for me to complete my turn. And so he passes me blaring on his horn in the oncoming traffic lane. If I had committed to the turn and was in the turn, he might have come by in the regular lane and still buzzed me. But, he buzzed me in the oncoming lane. And, we need more enforcement there. Another instance was I was on the Turkey Creek Streamway Trail northbound and crossed at the 67th Street grade crossing, pushed the light, legally waiting for the walk light to cross. I looked left, I looked right, I looked back left, and if I hadn't looked left and had pushed off, some guy paying attention to his phone instead of driving right would have hit me. Well, I even caught him on my action cam, but the Merriam cop shop said, well, we could, since I could not identify who actually was behind the wheel, they couldn't arrest anybody or give anybody a citation. We need more enforcement.
Okay, I'm going to ask about this also. I mean, Hal's talking about enforcement, but it also seems like a piece of this would be education, too, because as things change, and this is something we've talked about before, as the streets themselves change, how do the drivers change kind of to keep pace with that? And enforcement seems like it would be one piece of that.
Yeah, I mean, I think Hal touches on three kind of common issues we've heard over the past year as we've been talking to the community at large about the plan. First, education on how to interact appropriately when you're encountering cyclists and how cyclists, you know, should use this infrastructure as we install it. Secondly, enforcement issues. We will work with the Kansas City Police Department and other agencies to help with, you know, patrolling these sort of bike routes and issuing citations when they're warranted. But then thirdly and most importantly, ensuring that the proper infrastructure is on the roadway. So Southwest Boulevard is an interesting example of a place where we do have dedicated bike lanes, and they help, you know, they help drivers expect and anticipate the cyclists to be on the road, and they help cyclists have some space to really, you know, travel at their own speed. But for a space like Southwest Boulevard, where there's, you know, a lot of capacity, high volume of cars, high speeds of cars, we really want to promote the idea of a protected bike lane there. So there's less chance for encroachment into the bike facility with cars. And, you know, there's more separation, more safety for everybody involved in those types of facilities.
Eric, anything you want to add on that?
I really believe strongly in design and the power of design to make the safe choices, the safe habits, the easy ones. And so on something like Southwest Boulevard, it's absolutely critical to improve that at some point, because that represents an old way of designing bike facilities. We're really moving into a new generation of bike way design. And so, you know, I think I definitely echo Joe's comment about improving the design.
Let's talk to Eric calling us from Kansas City, Missouri. Hello, Eric.
How you doing?
Good. How about you?
I'm awesome today.
What do you want to tell us about bicycling in Kansas City?
Well, first of all, I love it. You know, I participate in it. I'm teaching my grandkids road safety. But as a ACATA driver, I utilize Grand, my route. And what I see sometimes is that cyclists are not aware that they're 3 and 4 in a row, and we have bus schedules, bus routes. I have people waiting on corners for us, and sometimes, you know, they don't think like that. They just are in their own world, and somebody who supports them, I'm just passing on. Maybe they need to look at it from a different perspective. That people utilize public transportation to get to work. Medical appointments. I mean, the list goes on and on.
Well, so, Eric Bunch, what do you think about, I mean, this is something we hear kind of frequently, that bicyclists also need maybe some education.
Yeah, and my organization, Bike Walk AC, does a significant amount of education for bicyclists and drivers and pedestrians as well. I'm a frequent transit user too, there are a couple of things. One, I don't want to assume that every bicyclist is just out there joyriding, and I don't think we should. But I also understand, I witness the Grand Boulevard in downtown and the interaction between bikes and buses, and it's difficult. And again, this goes back to design, and that would not, you wouldn't have that interaction or that negative conflict between buses and bikes if the bus never had to cross the bike lane to go pick up passengers.
Can you tell me about a city that maybe does this really well in a way that you'd like to see Kansas City emulate?
Yeah, absolutely. Seattle and San Francisco both do really fantastic jobs. They do what we call like a floating bus platform where the bike lane goes in behind the bus platform and the bus never has to cross the bike lane. And so I'm fearful for bicyclist safety who are in that bike lane. And although I will say that I trust drivers like Eric, good name by the way, I trust drivers like Eric because they're professionals far more than I trust a lot of drivers, but we have to have better design on facilities like that.
When KCOR Central Standard gets back from just a short break, we'll be hearing what's up with bicycle infrastructure in North Kansas City and wherever you live. Call 816-235-2888 with the good, the bad, and the ugly where the rubber hits the road. 816-235-2888. I'm Gina Kaufman. Be right back. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR Central Standard, and we're talking about bicycle infrastructure throughout the metro. Eric Bunch of Bike Walk KC, hello again.
Hi.
And Joe Blankenship with us from Kansas City, Missouri, long-range planning and preservation. Welcome back.
Hi.
Now I'd like to introduce Sarah Copeland, Community Development Director for the City of North Kansas City. And Sarah, what is going on with bike infrastructure in North Kansas City?
We have a number of projects that we're working on. Some of them are getting ready to finish this year or to go out to bid this year, and some are longer term. I'm very proud that we have the first fully separated two-way cycle track in the metro that is partially open, but the rest of it will be finished this summer.
Explain it for people who aren't sort of in on this world of planning and all that. What is that? What does it look like?
Well, if you get off of I-35 at Armor Road and then take a right on Taney, you can go about a block to Diamond Parkway and see it. It's a two-way lane for bicycles that's completely separated from the roadway, so that it has its own curb and gutter, and then there's a little grassy area before you get to the street. So except for crossing driveways, you don't have to interact with cars at all if you're on your bicycle.
That is pretty cool. How did you make that happen?
Well, this is in our Armor Road redevelopment area. So this is along a street that we're also building, and the street will be finished this summer as well. So we had a nice opportunity to think about what we wanted that area to look like. And we knew that in planning for the infrastructure there, we were helping to set a standard for that entire area and what it was going to look and feel like for development. And as we went through the infrastructure planning process, we decided that adding these bike facilities would be a nice amenity to add to that overall area and help provide more benefits to people who are using that area, either they're going to be living there or working there or just visiting, and then help connect this to the rest of the city.
So you mentioned that there are a number of things. Can you tell us about one other project that you're really excited about?
I'm really excited about our Armor Road Complete Street Plan. This is on the other side of the interstate from Burlington on the west to Ozark on the east. We did a plan looking at Armor Road in and out of our downtown. And Armor Road goes from two lanes with a center turn lane in downtown North Kansas City to seven lanes as you approach the interstate. And we were trying to figure out, we knew we didn't really need all of that roadway capacity for cars. What else can we do with some of that space? And so our complete street plan calls for adding bike lanes in that area. We're doing preliminary design now for those facilities and hope to have them out to bid August, to add parking protected bike lanes from Fayette to basically Quick Trip, if you're familiar with Armor Road in North Kansas City, and then buffered bike lanes in the rest of that street to the east.
So
that should be, if we get some good weather this fall and our bids are good, we could have that finished by the end of the year.
With with Kansas City, Missouri, one of the things we've been hearing about is that part of what makes it hard is where the funding comes from. Where does your funding come from?
It comes from our yearly budget being approved by the city council. So we don't have a dedicated funding stream for these projects. We're funding them one at a time.
Joe Blankenship with us from Kansas City, Missouri. Does this sound different from how it works where you're working every day?
Historically, yes. But moving forward, hopefully not. One of the ways that we were able to get the buffered bike lanes on Grand implemented was dedication of local funding. And our bike plan hits home at the fact that we need to continue to dedicate local dollars to implementing the infrastructure.
But, you know, Sarah, one of the other things you've got going for you is, I mean, people say that North Kansas City is a great part of town for biking because it's so flat.
Mm-hmm. We are.
And but I also understand that you yourself are not a bicyclist.
I'm not. I do not own a bike.
This is tragic to me.
Well, I'm really, our focus on bicycling started by thinking about our land uses and how we can better support redevelopment on Burlington and support growth in and around our downtown. And so we're focused on these streets as part of the overall system of the community and making it better for everyone so that it's safer, it's more attractive. You know, studies show that bicyclists spend more money. So we're really focused on this as one part of our community. And, you know,
so you're doing it for the city, not for the bicyclists on some level.
I mean, I love the bicyclists, too, but we're doing it for the city as a whole. And eventually, I'm sure I will be forced to finally buy a bike because I'll have some great places to ride it.
Well, let's talk to Daniel. Daniel's calling us from Kansas City. Hi, Daniel.
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you, yes.
All right. Thanks for having me on. Thanks for Eric Bunch and everybody there at the studio today. I've been a member, actually, of Bike Walk KC for a number of years and a bicycle commuter in Kansas City for 10 years, maybe a little longer. Haven't had a car for 7 of those. So I've done a lot of riding around town and seen a lot of changes for good and worse. You know, and for me, like learning the whole safety curve of bicycle commuting and just cycling in town, I mean, it was fun, you know, and you get to learn some things. But I think one of the big things for me was being visible, not just sort of like from a safety perspective, but like being in the lane and being another sort of vehicle allowed legally to be in the lane. And I guess my fear is, and what I've sort of seen change, is with the addition and expansion of bike lanes, I think there becomes a sort of an expectation that that's where I'm allowed to be, and that's where I'm only allowed to be, is in the bike lane, when, for whatever safety purposes, debris in the bike lanes is a huge issue, trash, glass, that it's still safer for me to ride in the lane. And I guess I sort of fear or have experienced so the backlash from sort of the motorists who may not know that I don't need to be in that lane.
Take this on, Eric.
Yeah, a couple of things. First and foremost is that you know, there are a handful of bicyclists like Daniel. I would consider myself one. I know Joe is, who, you know, we're comfortable riding in most of the conditions that we face in the city. However, we're a very small percent of the population, about 1 or 2% nationally and locally. So what we're concerned about at Bike Walk AC is improving the design of our streets so that the 40 or 50% who are interested but concerned for their safety are more able to get out and ride. I think there might be a danger of you know, some sort of backlash. You have to be in that bike lane if it's there.
Maybe a good problem to have, though.
Maybe. But what I think is also really important about visibility is that we know that cities who have higher bicycle ridership are ones that are more, they're safer. And so you get more facilities on the ground, you get more bicyclists, and it becomes safer.
I need to jump in because we have had a couple of callers who have been concerned about our general need for infrastructure improvements and why the money should be there for bike infrastructure improvements specifically when so much of our infrastructure needs attention. And I guess I'm going to turn to Sarah on this because, Sarah, it sounds like North Kansas City has decided that it is a worthwhile investment.
We definitely think it is. And I can understand the concern. We do have, just globally, a lot of infrastructure needs. But it's important to consider that bicycling is a mode of transportation that has needs just like every other part of our streets. So we need to be considering all of these modes when we're planning for our infrastructure dollars.
And do you say this as someone who does not own a bike?
And I say this as someone who does not own a bike.
Eric, convince her to get a bike. It sounds like North Kansas City is such an awesome place to ride a bike.
Well, we have a few bike share stations up there now thanks to her hard work, so we can start there.
Well, Sarah Copeland, Community Development Director for the City of North Kansas City, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Eric Bunch of Bike Walk KC and Joe Blankenship with us from Long Range Planning and Preservation for Kansas City, Missouri. Thank you both.
Thanks, Gina.
Always great to be here.
This has been Central Standard's annual check-in on bike infrastructure improvements throughout the metro. You can listen back at kcur.org/centralstandard, and you can keep talking to us on Twitter. We are at @KCURCST. Tonight, come see me at the Record Bar. We are having a storytelling event on the institution that is the Midwestern Family Road Trip. It's at 6:30 at the Record Bar tonight. Tomorrow, tune in for cowboy music and millennials lost in the wilderness. The show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Sylvia Maria Gross, Jen Chen, Suzanne Hogan, and Coy Duggar, with help from intern Matt Groby. I'm Gina Kaufman.